are listening to True Crime Fiction, feeding your addiction to the best of the written and the spoken word in crime. If you would like to support the podcast, you can do so for as little as £1 at patreon.com/truecrimefiction. There are certain people whom society deems to be sacred. Not sacred in the religious sense of a saint, like Mother Teresa. It is more ordinary human beings who for some reason become lifted above suspicion and above wrongdoing. In the last few years, many people who would have previously been thought untouchable have indeed fallen from grace, sometimes in spectacular ways. However, there still remains one category of people whom can do no wrong and no one can ever speak against. That is children with serious illness. Of course, it is obvious why. Children are, in essence, a symbol of hope for the future. Their innocence and lack of wisdom and knowledge being exactly the kind of vulnerability that makes us want to protect them. Many people, when they come to parenthood, are amazed to find that they don't just love their own children with a fierce passion, but overnight have come to love all children. Which is why, when some people question the serious diagnosis of Megan Barry, a young girl with a brain tumour, they became the target of abusive and spiteful messages. Megan, however, was not your run-of-the-mill seriously ill kid. She was seriously ill and ran a charity, Believe in Magic, which made wishes come true for other children in her situation and became a highly popular and effective fundraising charity. She was able to gain the attention of bands such as One Direction and other famous faces, giving serious cash and attention for terminally ill children, granting many of them an exciting last wish that would often be difficult for families to fulfil on their own. This elevated her to something near to sainthood in many people's eyes. Of course, charities are regulated to make sure that funds the public donate are going to causes they are told they are. In the UK, we have recently seen one charity which gained great public attention during the pandemic, now mired in accusations of poor accounting, misuse of funds, and misrepresentation of awards won. People may start charities with noble pursuits, but they are not necessarily easy to administer and run, especially for those who have no previous experience in the third sector. However, the problems with Believe in Magic were more than just a trouble with administrating such a public and popular charity with little experience while also battling a brain tumour. Some in the childhood cancer community started to feel that things were not adding up with Megan and what they were being told about her diagnosis and treatment. However, when they spoke about their concerns, they were not received well, and many leapt to the defence of Megan and her mother Jean, citing all the good they had done and admonishing those who quite literally did not believe in magic. Money was raised for complex and expensive treatments which Megan needed to undergo in the States. While Megan's mum was posting about the difficult and complex operations and recovery Megan was going through, amateur sleuths found they had been living for months in a luxury Disneyland resort, spending $72,000 of donated funds rather than in the hospital bed that was being claimed. A private investigator was employed to follow Megan and her mum Jean on their return to the UK and found no sign of the kinds of serious illness she was meant to be suffering from. Still, Some people refuse to believe that Meghan could be anything other than an incredibly brave and hardworking girl who was very ill. The story, however, takes another twist when Meghan sadly dies. Those who had been adamant that there was something fishy about her illness questioned themselves and wondered if they had in fact been hounding a genuinely ill girl. They received abuse from others, but when Meghan's funeral was cancelled on the morning of the service itself, alarm bells began to ring again. Jamie Bartlett, who has been tracking the story of Believe in Magic, manages to get hold of the report from the inquest into Meghan's death and finds that indeed not all was as it seemed. And also talking to Meghan's sisters and those who befriended Jean after Meghan's death, it emerges that perhaps the picture surrounding Meghan and her illness was more complicated than anyone could have imagined. It puts Meghan in the societal no man's land between villain and victim, which so many women are left in when they have not conformed to the rigid expectations of either side of that crime coin. It also leaves the listener with a moral quandary. While medical fraud happens and appears to be increasingly popular given the shield the internet allows people to hide behind, no one wants to be the person who does not believe a child is seriously ill and invalidates the stress, strain, and emotional upheaval that leaves all their family in. The duty of safeguarding appears here to lie firmly in the lap of the medical establishment, who, while some of them had suspicions about what was happening with Meghan, were not coordinated enough to put an end to it. And sadly, a young woman lost her life to something that could have been prevented. The podcast Nobody Should Believe Me approaches medical fraud from a different side of the coin. Those who are related to people committing factitious illness disorder and are trying desperately to stop them. Factitious illness disorder is the new name for Munchausen's and its sibling Munchausen's by proxy. The podcast dives into what FID and FID by proxy are and how difficult it is to get a diagnosis. Perpetrators, who are most often women, are incredibly cunning and are often able to exploit weaknesses in the medical system to their own advantage, listening to the stories of families deeply concerned about their relatives' behaviour and health, often their own children, is heartbreaking. The host of Nobody Should Believe Me, Andrea Dunlop, whose sister is suspected of having FID, also talks about the portrayal of FID in crime fiction. She singles out HBO's Sharp Objects, which is based on the Gillian Flynn novel of the same name, and is one of the best booked TV adaptations to recently grace our screens. In the novel and adaptation, the FID is the inciting incident as well as root cause of the crime currently being investigated by the protagonist. It provides a portrait of the lasting damage that is caused by both those who are bystanders and those who are subject to it. While I thoroughly enjoyed Amy Adams' portrayal of the damaged beyond repair Camille Preaker, who, like many of Flynn's characters, purposefully bucks the trend of the likeable female lead, Dunlop finds the series unhelpful. An accusation which is not without bias, as it links FID in with victims becoming potentially murderous. While Flynn excavates the harms of intergenerational abuse, particularly how it's expressed by different personalities, for those fighting against FID, the picture of both perpetrator and victim as monstrous could add to a skewed public perception about the illness and abuse that is involved, and less opportunities to spot and protect the victims. One of the reasons why it is so hard to spot perpetrators and victims is that these crimes happen largely in a domestic setting. Women who kill and abuse often do it behind closed doors, and society's perception of women as only being caretakers or naturally nurturing can be exploited by those who are hiding a manipulative and twisted psyche. For example, for some time it was thought that there was no female serial killers, but that is easily proven wrong. It's just that women were killing in quieter ways, killing their husbands, relatives, children, or people they cared for. Women are often angels of mercy, a term for medical murderers who gain jobs in health and social care and then use it to satisfy their lust for control and power while trying to claim that they were helping their victims, releasing them from suffering. In the UK, we've recently seen an example of this with the trial of Lucy Letby, a placid beige-looking nurse who is now the biggest child killer in modern British history. Colleagues had suspected that she was behind the rise in child deaths on the neonatal ward she worked on, and after raising their concerns, were forced to write to her a letter of apology. It is likely that Letby's crimes are going to haunt the medical profession for some time, just as other medical serial killer Harold Shipman has done. However, there is something that feeds into the way that people like Letby and other women who care, abuse and kill operate. Benevolent sexism. It is the kind of sexism that paints all women as saints. You'll hear it in comments like, "The world should be run only by women. Women are just better at X than men." On the surface, it sounds supportive of women and as though it recognises our strengths. But in reality, it paints us into a corner where we have to fit perfectly on a pedestal and conform to the images of women as nurturers and caretakers, which is narrow, restrictive, and also not work everyone is cut out for. The reason this matters in crime is because women who commit these awful acts hide behind the mask of caring and nurturing, and their traditional domination in the lives of children and elderly and infirm has allowed them to operate with a certain amount of impunity. If we had a more balanced view of women, and were able to acknowledge that as well as great ability to nurture, there is also great ability to hurt, then perhaps it would be easier to put in place things to stop those who have such strong compulsions to harm those who they should be protecting the most. You have been listening to True Crime Fiction, the podcast that is feeding your addiction to all things crime. You can find our website at true-crime-fiction.com, on Twitter at true_crime_fic, on Facebook and Instagram as True Crime Fiction. Please rate and review on the podcast app of your choice. Music is by Kitty Kitty Meow Meow.
What a depressing note to end on.